And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, My Unpredictable Storytelling Father, was written by Mark Siegel.
You know, one thing I never expected ever to do was to tell any of the stories my father told me. When I say told me, I mean told me over and over, till I could hardly stand it. There's hardly a word in those stories I can't remember. My father would say,
That reminds me of the time when...
And I'd say to myself...
Oh, no, not again.
So, it comes as much of a surprise to me as it does perhaps to you to find myself wanting to tell you some of my father's stories. To understand my father's stories at all, you have to know a little about him. To begin with, he was born in the United States in the year 1880.
We're a very old, unestablished family. Very.
It was just that kind of puzzling, unadorned statement that would lead me into the trap. Every time, I'd ask a question.
What do you mean, Pa? Old and unestablished?
When I ask a question like that, my father's eyes would take on the narrative look. That's all I can call it, a narrative look. And he'd say...
My answer to you is as follows.
It was a signal, that phrase. When my father said, my answer to you is as follows, it was time to run. That is, if you didn't want to hear one of those stories. I mean, if you didn't want to hear one of those stories again. As my father saw it, we were an old family because with the rest of the human race, we could trace ourselves back to Adam. But we were unestablished because we'd only been in this country for a few generations. As far as I could see it, however, he was the most firmly established man I ever knew. He was a doctor, and everyone, absolutely everyone, on East 7th Street knew him. At least, everyone on East 7th Street between Avenue A and 2nd Avenue. Or, almost everyone. And everyone who knew him spoke of him with special pride. You see, for one thing, he was noted for never losing his temper with his patients.
I said 2 aspirins every 4 hours, not 4 aspirins every 2 hours. What's your trouble? Haven't you got ears?
He was also known for his originality of expression.
The body is like a machine. What's that? You say you've heard that before? Well, what difference does that make? The body is still like a machine.
There were times when he would say,
What do you think? Your outlook on life controls everything. Better eat more bread and butter.
And on other occasions, he'd tell the same patient,
Listen, the body isn't everything. Forget the medicines and go to the synagogue a little more often.
In short, my father may not have been unestablished, but he was certainly unpredictable. Unpredictable, that is, about everything except his stories. You could count on them. Even the simplest question put to my father could evoke one of his inexhaustible stock of stories. For instance, there was the time I asked,
Pa, can I ever raise my allowance?
Joe, my answer to you is as follows.
The signal. I should have known better, but I never learned.
When I was a boy, we lived on the Lower East Side. There were times when I slept on boards.
Boards?
Boards. Well, very hard beds.
Oh,
when I was growing up, my first job was in Brooklyn. 10 hours a day I worked.
And you got $3 a week.
Now, Joe, how did you know that?
I seem to remember hearing about it somewhere before.
That's odd. In any case, to save carfare, I walk the Brooklyn Bridge every morning and every night. Twice a day, 5 times a week, and on Sundays.
Pa, what about my allowance?
The weather didn't matter. It could rain or snow, it didn't matter. Twice a day, 5 times a week, I walk the Brooklyn Bridge.
And on Sundays.
Now, don't be impertinent.
I'm not being impertinent. I just appreciate knowing about my allowance.
Allowance? Oh, of course. Well, what do you think I'm talking about except your allowance?
I should tell you that I got the raise in my allowance. But that's not the point. The point is that there were always stories. If my brother Milton and I had a fight over something, who would read a certain book that afternoon or who would run a certain errand, and neither of us would give in, we could expect to hear the one about the horse cars. That one always started with, on East Broadway, when I was a boy,
there used to be horse cars. One day, by mistake, a southbound horse car and a northernbound horse car got on the same track. Neither driver would back up.
That was when the traffic got jammed, Joe.
Please, Joe, who's telling this story?
You are?
All right, then. Finally, when the traffic was jammed up from the East River to the Hudson River, a policeman took the two drivers to court. Do you know what the judge said?
Yes. He said...
Don't interrupt. The judge said, whichever one yields first is the wiser.
Okay, Pa. Then let Milton be the wiser. He's older than I am.
Hmm? Yes, that's fair. He's older. He should be the wiser.
You heard him, Milton.
On the other hand, you shouldn't use your extreme youth as a weapon, Joe. So today it's your turn. You'll be the wiser.
As you can see, except for his stories, my father was an unpredictable man. There were times when I was 12 when I used to think my father had a kind of card catalog of stories in his head, a sort of mental equivalent of the card catalogs in the public library on Second Avenue, which he could consult on any subject. I used to think of my father's head as being stacked with stories, and I would imagine he had a kind of machine inside his head that picked out the stories, the right stories, for the right times. If a patient came into his office and said,
Doc, I can't sleep,
I'd imagine the machine springing into action. I could practically see the file cards turning up right inside his head.
Slap, slate, slave, sled.
There. It would be coming now.
Sleep. That was it. My answer to you is as follows.
What, Doc?
Get up an hour earlier.
Now, doctors, along with lawyers, preachers, school principals, and psychiatrists, suffer from an occupational disease, giving advice. My unpredictable father was no exception to the rule. He was always giving advice to his patients. But to us, the members of an old and unestablished family, he gave no advice. I can't remember his ever scolding us or reprimanding us. He just told stories. Once, my father sent me to Wanamaker's, a department store about 5 blocks away, to buy an appointment book for him. It was a cold day, and I was glad to get back to the house.
Pa, I've got it.
Good. Bring it in here.
Here it is, Pa.
Right. That's the one. It costs $2?
Yes, Pa. Here's the change. 1, 2, 3, 4.
I only gave you 5, Joe.
I know. They made a mistake at the store then. They gave me an extra dollar.
Well, you take it right back.
Now?
Now?
But, Pa, it's so cold.
Joe, it's not that cold.
But, Pa, they expect to make mistakes at a store like that.
They do?
Sure they do. Couldn't we just keep it?
Joe, my answer to you is as follows.
I could practically see the machine inside his head, picking over the stories. The one about the man who found the wallet on Division Street, or The one about the misaddressed letter with the money in it. Or even the one about Abe Lincoln trudging through the snow to return a book. But it was none of them. It was a new one.
Joe, when I was just getting started as a doctor, a man came to see me one afternoon.
Afternoon, Doc.
Good afternoon.
My name is Frank Miller, Doc, Harry Miller's brother.
Oh, yes. I was very sorry to hear about your brother. It was a terrible thing. Terrible. He was a good man.
Yeah, he was. Look, Doc, I'll come right to the point.
Fine, Mr. Miller.
My brother Harry left me some insurance, $20,000 worth.
Yes?
The policy says the company doesn't have to pay the money if his death was caused by, what do they call it, Doc? You probably know.
A physical impairment he had before he took out the policy.
Yeah, that's it. Well,
Well, what?
Well, I want you to sign a paper which says he didn't have one of them.
But, Mr. Miller, your brother Harry used to have epileptic spells. It's a long time ago, it's true, but...
Can you be sure that's what caused the accident?
No, but when a man has a history
well,
like
maybe
that...
Maybe he did have a medical history, and maybe he didn't, Doc.
What do you mean, maybe? I know he did.
Look, Doc, no one else in the whole world knows that, only you and me.
Only... Get out of my office, Mr. Miller. Get out before...
Look, Doc, I hear you're not doing so well. I hear your wife's in the hospital.
That has nothing to do with it.
I wouldn't have come if I didn't know you need some cash badly. Now, you sign this paper.
I said get out of here.
Doc, you don't understand. They got millions of dollars, that company.
I don't care if they have billions. Now, get out. You hear me? Get out.
Okay, okay, Doc. Take it easy. Only those insurance companies, they got lots of money.
So what happened, Pa?
What happened? I understand he got the $20,000 anyway, the poor man. He was certainly unlucky.
Unlucky? He got the $20,000 and he wasn't lucky?
Of course he was unlucky. Every night he has to go to sleep knowing that he took $20,000 that didn't belong to him. Now, get on your coat and take that dollar back to Wanamaker's, Joe.
My father's world was full of unlucky people with $20,000. And lucky people who were wondering how to pay their bills. But more than this, it was a world in which, even for an old and unestablished family, there were rules to live by. Rules which could be modified by other rules, to be sure. But rules. I remember the first time I wanted to go on an outing on a Saturday afternoon.
No, Joe. Not on the Sabbath.
The Sabbath was our day of prayer and rest and dedication. A day when we all stayed at home after we returned from the synagogue, and it was forbidden to engage in secular activities.
But, Pa, my teacher, Miss Farrell, is taking us. All we're going to do is walk to the Battery.
On the Sabbath, Joe?
But it's just to see the rivers, Pa, and the bay. It's a reward, Pa, for me and three other kids for writing the best compositions.
And it's just to see the rivers and the bay?
Yes, Pa. Please, Pa, can I go? It's a reward, Pa.
Joe, my answer to you is as follows.
It was the story about my father's professor at medical school.
I'm sorry, Professor. I can't do it.
Young man, I don't think you understand the implication.
I think I do, Professor.
Now listen to me again. This paper you've written is very original. I want you to come to the Medical Society's meeting on Saturday afternoon to read it. I've arranged the whole thing.
Professor, I appreciate your interest in me. If I thought my reading the paper would help anybody, I'd do it.
But that's the whole point, young man. It will help you. It's very unusual for a student to be asked to appear. Don't you understand, young man? It's important for your career to get to know some of these men.
On the day I observe the Sabbath?
Well, that's up to you. You've been a good student, a superior student, and I've looked for some reward for you, a real reward.
So you mean I can't go on the outing?
To the Battery?
See the rivers in the bay.
Joe, on the Sabbath, we give praise to God, and we know he's present by his handiwork. The rivers and the bay are God's handiwork. A walk to the Battery is no lecture before a medical society. Go right ahead.
He was a very unpredictable man. There were other fathers on East 7th Street, and they told stories to their children, too. They told stories from the Bible and stories from the Talmud. They quoted the Proverbs and the Psalms, and their children listened and understood. My father was not a scholar, and yet, in his so often repeated stories, perhaps there was a quality of which even he was unaware. Perhaps his stories really came from the same great reservoir that provided the stories told by other fathers in our old and unestablished society on East 7th Street. For me, at the age of 12, however, they seemed quite different. For they were stories which had been lived by people I had known. They were stories about members of my family which had been played out in the streets I'd walked, and in the houses I'd been in, and in the synagogue in which I prayed, and the stores in which my mother bought her groceries. They were real stories, as real as my father's moral values. In my father's repertoire of all the stories, there was one that popped up continuously. If the machine in his head went...
Charity.
Or...
Compassion.
Or even...
Robbery.
Or possibly piety or courage or adversity. Under any of these headings, and many others, this particular story could and would come up. It's the story my father told that I remember best of all.
That reminds me of a story. When I was a boy, one Friday evening, we all went to synagogue.
Only one Friday evening, Pa?
Now, Joe, don't interrupt. We went every Friday evening, of course. Of course, but I'm talking about a particular Friday evening. This particular Friday evening, while we were welcoming in the Sabbath, the clothing store Grandpa owned on Division Street was welcoming in something else.
What, Pa?
I was really a terrible hypocrite. I asked just as if I didn't know, probably because there was a natural pause in the story and I felt I had to fill it.
Wait, you'll know in a minute.
Okay, Pa, I'm listening.
Saturday night was a big night on Division Street. After the sun had set, Grandpa and Grandma would go to the store to open up. Later, the older boys, I was one of them, would come to help. That particular Saturday night, Grandpa got out his keys to open the store, as he always did.
Ethel, what's this?
What's what?
The door's open.
Sam, how can you be so careless?
What do you mean, careless?
You locked up on Friday, didn't you?
Of course I locked up. I always lock up.
Then why did you leave the door open?
I didn't leave the door open. Somebody opened it.
Now, why should somebody open our door? It's our store, isn't it?
Ethel, maybe you haven't noticed, but there are no suits in the window either.
No suits? You're right. There are no suits. Sam, what's happened? Why did you leave the door open?
In a minute, we'll see what's happened. But first, Ethel...
First what? Now, let's go inside and see what's happened.
But first, whatever's happened, Ethel, it's not enough to make us quarrel. It's not enough to make you distrust me.
Please, Sam, who distrusts you?
If you keep asking, did I lock up on Friday, you distrust me.
Oh, Sam, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it.
Good. That's better.
I guess I was excited.
All right. I accept your apology. Now let's go in and see what's happened.
They walked inside, and what they saw would have been enough to make an ordinary man or woman cry. Every last suit, every last bolt of cloth, every pattern, every scissors and needle was gone. It looked as if Grandpa's store had moved to what they used to call new and larger quarters. Grandma sat down heavily on a bench. They had left the bench and looked up at Grandpa.
How could they do it, Sam?
I've been asking myself the same question.
They must have backed the van up to the door. Everything they took, everything. How could they do it in broad daylight?
Exactly. Any other day of the week, I can see how they could do it.
Now, what do you mean, any other day of the week?
But on Saturday? To rob a store on Saturday when a man's in synagogue? Or on Sunday when he's in church?
Sam, what are we going to do?
Wait. We'll figure out what to do. Imagine, while a man's praying, they rob his store. Those robbers, Ethel.
What, Sam?
Those robbers. They must feel terrible tonight. Ethel, I certainly am sorry for those poor robbers.
Grandpa was sorry for the robbers, Pa?
Please, Joe. Don't interrupt the story. Well, soon, all over Division Street, everybody knew that Grandpa's store had been cleaned out by robbers. In every store, heads shook and people said, "Poor Sam. What's going to happen to him?" And inside the empty store, Grandpa and Grandma and the older boys, including me, sat. And we wondered also.
Well, Sam, what are we going to do?
We'll sit a little. We'll think. Also, we'll remember, all of us.
We'll remember what, Sam?
We'll remember that we ate a good dinner, didn't we? Also, we haven't missed a meal yet, have we? So we'll remember while we're thinking not to worry. We'll think, but we won't worry.
It was while we were thinking, but not worrying, that it started.
Oh, come in, Mr. Levy.
Hello, Sam. Hello, Ethel.
Hello, Mr. Levy.
Sam, there's something you can do for me.
Something I... What can I do for you, Mr. Levy?
I want to buy a suit, Sam.
A suit? How can I sell you a suit?
I'll buy it now. You'll make it later.
How do you know you'll get your suit? How do you know anyone will sell me material?
I'll get the suit, and you'll get the material.
How can you be sure? I owe a lot of money, Mr. Levy, for all the goods that were stolen.
You're an honest man, Sam, so I'm sure I'll get the suit.
You think I can get cloth without collateral?
Sam, what's better collateral than an honest man?
So that's the way it started. After Mr. Levy, the druggist came in to buy a suit. Then the fisherman, then Mr. Goldstein, the novelties and notions man, then the baker, everybody on Division Street and a few other streets came to buy suits which weren't there from Grandpa that night.
That's a good story, Pa.
It's not the end of the story, Joe. How we worked making those suits, all of us. Even the littlest one helped. Every night, all night we worked for 3 years until all the debts had been paid and Grandpa was on his feet again. Yes, Joe, it was a wonderful thing, that robbery. A wonderful thing.
Wonderful, Pa? You mean terrible.
Joe, don't contradict me. I mean wonderful.
Why wonderful?
Because I worked my fingers to the bone.
That's wonderful.
My answer to you is as follows.
I thought...
Oh, no, not another story. Not one on top of the other. He couldn't.
And he didn't. It was the only time I can remember when my father started with a signal and followed with an explanation, not a story.
Of course it's wonderful. Don't you see? If we hadn't gone to synagogue, there couldn't have been a robbery. If there hadn't been a robbery, all those good people on Division Street wouldn't have had the chance to be so good. If they didn't get the chance to be so good, we wouldn't have had to work so hard, and I never would have found out how hard I could work. If I hadn't found out how hard I could work, I never would have gone to medical school. I never would have become a doctor. I never would have married your mother. And I never would have had a son like you to whom I could tell the story. It was certainly a wonderful thing, that robbery.
I don't know whether I got the point across about my father's stories. Perhaps you'd have to hear them as I did over and over.
The great quality they had, I suppose, was that they reflected a confidence in life, a power to face life. My father, my unpredictable storytelling father, is gone now. But when I think of him, I remember most the stories, the endless stories. They're a legacy that grows in richness with the years. For each story, every story that my storytelling father told, conveyed a gift of age-old wisdom, a gift you will find in a single sentence in the Bible. His stories and his life proclaim the words, "Those who trust in the Lord will renew their strength."
The spiritual legacy of our story today is the legacy that all parents, I am sure, wish to leave their children. A confidence in life, a power to face life with wisdom and courage to meet its realities and its challenges, come what may. My unpredictable storytelling father points out to us all again the fundamental part which family life and home environment play in moral and ethical living. Today in our complex society, there are a great many laws to control juvenile delinquency. Our nation, our society, is one which is built on law. We boast of equal justice under law. Thus, we become accustomed to laws. But is it not true that there are many things that laws cannot do? Here in America, the family is the central and strongest unit of our community life. It is the basic structure upon which our society is built. With, and only with, a strong family basis can our laws have strength and meaning. Without a strong basic structure, any law, no matter how important or far-reaching, yes, and no matter how well-written, will be weak and ineffectual. Statistics show that there is an ever-increasing number of young people attending religious institutions and religious services. We hope they are attending for what they will find there, not because it is the popular thing to do. Prepared at home and motivated by the teachings of the family, our youth will find in our religious institutions help and guidance in searching for the truth. Youth must test, must try things for themselves. But directed by the family, they can receive the gift of age-old wisdom. Given the necessary encouragement and background of an ethical and moral home life, the storytelling father may well be the instrumentality of changing what might otherwise be a humdrum and uninteresting existence into a joyous, fruitful, and...